Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
I am far more concerned than what's happening at the editorial page by what's happening in news pages.
Molly Hemingway speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
In news pages, that old idea that we had for a few decades of aiming toward objectivity has just been completely thrown out the window.
And this is a generalization, but I think it bears out. And again, I mean, even 5-10 years ago, it would have sounded crazy that I'd be saying this, but I mean, I think it is the case. You have to view the explicit goal of most of the major journalistic institutions in this country as electing Democrats. And when they aren't electing Democrats, they're trying to push the Democratic Party further left.
You can watch and listen to a recording of journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway's Q&A from our 2020 Making the Case conference. It's available in both video and audio formats for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
If you think things cannot possibly get worse, trust me, they can and they will if we don't make a change in this election. If we have any hope of ending this chaos, we have got to vote for Joe Biden like our lives depend on it.
I'm a lifelong Republican, but that attachment holds second place to my responsibility to my country. That's why I've chosen to appear at this convention. In normal times, something like this would probably never happen. But these are not normal times.
Let me take this opportunity to say a word to the millions of people who supported my campaign this year and in 2016. Many of the ideas we fought for that just a few years ago were considered radical are now mainstream. But let us be clear, if Donald Trump is reelected, all the progress we have made will be in jeopardy.
I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility, I accept this nomination for President of the United States of America.
Some voices from this week's Democratic National Convention. It was held virtually. It was broadcast on television. It had, well, ratings about 20% lower than the 2016 Democratic National Convention, but that does not count people watching it online. And it was a first for the Democratic Party, and the Republicans will be the first for their convention as well. What was the strongest part? What was the low point? How has the media covered the Democratic National Convention? And what can the Republicans learn about their convention by watching the DNC do theirs? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday, August the 21st, we're going to talk about the Democratic National Convention. Joining us to do so, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. Mark, welcome to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
And Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist and co-author of the book Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Molly, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Molly, first you. What do you think was the strongest part of the DNC convention?
I think a big part of the problem that the Democrats had with their convention is not their fault. It was a virtual convention, and the whole point of conventions is to get your most rabid supporters together, work on party business, nominate officially your candidates, and cheer them on for what should be a grueling campaign. There were no people there, and it really made the convention boring. And the Democratic Party has always used celebrities to generate excitement. It kind of came off a bit condescending and whatnot. So for me, the strongest part of the convention was something that I wish they had done much more of, which is have normal people who aren't mean to give speeches. And last night, Braden Harrington, who was a 13-year-old boy, told a story about how Joe Biden had helped him work on public speaking. They both have stuttering problems. And it was just very endearing. The boy was very cute, and he had a nice message, and it was speaking to the theme of last night, which is Joe Biden is a nice guy. And so I think that was basically the best speech of the convention and the big highlight.
What about you, Mark?
I think the convention overall, I would agree with what Molly said. I mean, there were a lot of problems, I think, with the production values and stuff being sort of halting and weird. It, drive vibe that sort of diminished it as a spectacle. So that was a problem. But I would say that the highlight, I think, in a lot of ways, was they did a good job on the prepackaged, you know, biography stuff. I mean, a lot of the things they did about Biden and his family were really compelling. You know, there was a lot of videos and things like that, you know, telling Biden's, you know, story, his personal tragedies, death of his son, the death of his wife and child, that I thought was really sort of, you know, touching. And I mean, I think that Biden has a sort of everyman touch that is not entirely, you know, insincere, which is, you know, rare among politicians, and they did a good job of conveying that. I will say that they did such a good job that, you know, there was so much good biography stuff last night in particular that, like, Biden actually appeared and gave what I thought was a fairly generic speech. It was almost kind of a letdown because they, you know, turned him into such a, you know, superhuman creature. But I do think it was effective on some level in that regard in humanizing Biden and making him seem relatable.
So, Molly, what was the low point in those days?
Well, it was a very dark and almost joyless convention, which is, again, partly because of the way it was done. Usually in conventions, those pre-taped videos are the boring things that nobody watches in between the real action. But I think the bigger problem for them was that they just never discussed policy. On the day after the convention ended, on Friday, Donald Trump just gave this, like, rousing speech about what he's done in his first term, what he plans to do in his second term, what he sees the threat of the left being if he's not reelected. And it was full of policy after policy after policy, whether it's judges or the climate deal or foreign policy or, you know, pro-life decisions. Democrats have a big civil war going on in their party where the progressive radicals on the left are about to take over from these older people who sort of present as more moderate. And so they couldn't talk policy because they didn't want to tell people where they're actually going with policy, which is pretty radical. And so they just ended up not saying anything. And I think that while being against Donald Trump might be enough for them to win in November, it would have just been much better for them to give actual policies, particularly policies that appealed to those middle class, moderate voters that they lost last time around.
Mark, what was the low point?
Well, there were a couple things. One is, you know, Molly already sort of alluded to this, the over-the-top celebrity stuff that they had. In particular, Julia Louis-Dreyfus hosting the final night and making all these pre-scripted jokes. I mean, that were just absolutely terrible. And then on top of that, delivered with no live audience to respond. It was just, it was painful to watch. And then they did some other things, like I think it was the first night, they did this musical number with Stephen Stills doing For What It's Worth, which is the big Vietnam anthem. But they'd updated it, and it was being sung by this very flamboyant Billy Porter. And it just did not work. It was like the worst of, like, baby boomer hippies meets today's woke progressives mashed into this musical number that was almost unwatchable. So there was just so much, I don't know, it was like almost becoming a caricature of itself in that regard. And then on top of that, I would say that the worst part was just the speeches themselves. If you watch the convention, you know, all of the typical speeches that were given by people, with maybe the exception of Bernie Sanders and a few other people that are on the outliers of the party, the political rhetoric anymore has become so standard. Watching Pete Buttigieg's speech and Joe Biden's speech last night, I mean, they're like, I almost could have, like, sat down and predicted what they were going to say, you know, what cliches they were going to use, you know, the path of hope, and we're going to talk a lot about light, and, you know, it doesn't feel fresh anymore. You know, they've been trading on the same cliches for so long that it's a reminder of why I think in a lot of ways people like Trump. I mean, he's such a breath of fresh air, at least rhetorically. I mean, sometimes, you know, obviously that's over the top, but, you know, when Trump opens his mouth, it's at least compelling. I mean, he spoke extemporaneously for an hour, you know, just this afternoon, and, you know, it was totally compelling because it didn't sound rehearsed or anything. It sounded like an actual human being speaking, whereas, you know, Biden's speech was clearly written by committee and just overwritten and tired cliches, and I think people are kind of sick of that aspect of politicking, especially after 8 years of Obama. So Democrats have to find a way to, like, reinvent their messaging because it's so standard. Just got to do something to get people's attention better when they give speeches.
Molly, how would you rate the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's acceptance speech?
Well, this was what the entire convention was building up to, was his nominating speech. It's what concluded the convention. And it was not particularly remarkable. I don't think many people could remember a single line from it even hours after it was done. The media claimed that it was the most triumphant thing they'd ever seen, which by the standard that he didn't like pass out while giving the speech, because some people talk about Joe Biden's cognitive decline and his problems with acuity and energy. And so they said that it was just masterful, but you actually need to do more than not fall over. And so what I thought was particularly troubling about the speech is that while he is known to be a nice guy, it's also true that nice people should not lie. And I know all politicians have issues with this, but he repeated something that he has to know is false unless he really is at a state of cognitive decline beyond what we know, which is the false claim that President Trump did not condemn racists at a Charlottesville rally when he did, in fact, condemn racists explicitly and generally and specifically and repeatedly. And so Joe Biden keeps saying that, and the media aren't holding him accountable because they perpetuated that lie. They created that lie, actually, and then they perpetuated it. So that, and then he also said he had a big plan for how to handle coronavirus, where he listed off a bunch of things that are already being done by the federal government and under Donald Trump. So I didn't think it was a particularly effective speech.
Mark, what about Kamala Harris's acceptance speech?
I don't know what to say about Kamala Harris because I just feel like I don't get her, and frankly, neither did Democratic voters. I mean, if you look at the enthusiasm that came out of her campaign, which frankly was disastrous in a lot of ways. I mean, a lot of people observed her organization in Iowa and other things and said it was like one of the worst political campaigns they'd ever seen. She just, you know, was unable to captivate the Democratic base. But, you know, she checks the boxes, you know, Biden was looking for, and that she's a black female. And it was really interesting to see her again, you know, give a speech that didn't change the game in any way, shape, or form. And again, have everyone, like, you know, go out of their way to say nice things about it when, again, that Kamala has not presented any evidence since she was selected by Joe Biden to be vice president that she's a particular asset to his ticket beyond the basic identity politics pegs that she fills. And I don't think she did anything remarkable with her speech in that regard, that, you know, again, there's no memorable line, so nothing about the way she presented herself to Democratic voters that would have changed whatever unfavorable opinion of her that they already had from her lackluster appearance in the primary.
What did you make of it, Molly?
Well, I actually have a little bit of a different take in that I think Kamala Harris's big problem is that she comes off really well for a few minutes and then people get really tired of her really quickly. And so in a way, the fact that she didn't make a powerful impression was a big success for her. I think people are going to, I think the concern from Democrats is that people are going to tire of her very quickly. So by not tiring of her by this point might help her in the long run. But she also needs to get much better speech writers that, you know, she attempted to do some stuff with metaphors that just didn't work, that didn't actually make sense. And so I think someone like her, who already has problems with substance, should get a much better writing staff.
We're talking with Molly Hemingway of Fox News and Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations about the Democratic National Convention. Of course, the format was virtual. We'll find out how that worked next.
Independent and in the black for 12 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The person who makes the claim bears the burden. Not the Christian. It's not the Christian's job to disprove their claim, not first.
Greg Kokel speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The first step is to gather information with some form of the question, what do you mean by that? The second step is to reverse the burden of proof when the other person is making the claim with some form of the question, how did you come to that conclusion? And now this gives them a chance to give you a point of view with reasons in favor of it. Until they do that, you have nothing really to speak to because they haven't made a case of any kind. They just emoted.
You can watch and listen to Greg Kokel's presentation, Making the Case for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, on a recording of the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. For a $250 tax-deductible gift, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast. Order today at issuesetc.org. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations and Molly Hemingway of Fox News are our guests. Molly, both of you have discussed this before, but let's talk about the virtual format for the convention. I was kind of impressed with it to a certain degree, but I know of a major newspaper that carried a theater critic yesterday saying it was award-winning TV, and I think he said the future of conventions. What do you make of that, Molly?
Well, Mark and I disagree a little bit on conventions. I love them. I think he hates them. We've covered a lot of them in our careers, and I actually like the wackiness and the craziness of the whole thing. I thought it really didn't work, although they did the best, and they kind of got better over time. The first night was a disaster. By the last night, they tried to like manufacture some energy by having socially distant cars in a parking lot, and Jill and Joe Biden came out and waved at the Democrats who were seated in their cars or, you know, waving flags out of their cars. I thought that made a little bit more energy, but it's just very, very difficult. You clearly, if you're going to have to do a virtual convention, you're going to have to get better production values. And Republicans usually have much lower production values at their conventions than Democrats do. And they typically have much less excitement because they have less celebrities and whatnot. But in this case, I'm not expecting the Republican convention to be particularly mind-blowing or anything, but I think it can meet definitely the bar that was set by the Democrats. But other than the one thing I thought worked better than a normal convention, one of my favorite things at conventions is when they go around to each state and ask them who they're casting their votes for. The virtual version of that enabled people to really hype their state from their state. And I liked that, and I thought that maybe is something that could be incorporated in the future.
Mark, what was the term you used a few minutes ago, PBS telethon?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like an NPR pledge drive in terms of its production values. There were a lot of celebrities and stuff involved. You know, there's a lot of out-of-work TV producers floating around, you know, that are, you know, obviously inclined to be, you know, Democrats. I just don't understand, like, why they couldn't have done something that just looked slicker and was better run. There were all these sort of, like, halting, like, there'd be, like, 3 seconds of silence when they transitioned between speakers and stuff like that. I mean, this is stuff that local news telecasts do without fail every night, and somehow they couldn't even rise to that level of production value. So it was just unwatchable at times, and just because of the sort of production values. And even just like basic things, like I kind of disagree with what Molly said. I mean, I agree it was good to get Joe Biden outside of the end of the convention with that tailgating thing, but even just like the optics of it, Biden was standing basically in a dark state wearing a black mask. I mean, he looked like Cobra Commander or something in front of these cars. I mean, just like clearly someone didn't like think about what the shot would look like. I don't know. I'm frankly just surprised that it looks so bad. And I will say I've been down on the actual sort of conventions for a number of years, having covered a number of conventions. You know, a lot of them are just sort of spectacle, but I'm almost coming back around to what, you know, Molly says. You know, you've got to have like real people involved, you know, to get some energy, because otherwise the scriptedness and the bland cliches and all the stuff involved in modern politics just becomes really, really apparent. At least when you have an enthusiastic crowd cheering when you utter your silly speech full of cliches, you know, that at least provides some enthusiasm and some reason to think that it's a compelling moment, as opposed to having to evaluate it in such a dry setting.
Molly, how would you rate the media coverage and reaction to the DNC convention?
Well, in the last 4 years, the media have gone from being obviously biased on behalf of Democratic candidates to just being openly biased on behalf of Democratic candidates. There's really no distinction between the media and the Democratic Party, except that I think maybe the power has changed a bit. It used to be said that the media were the public relations arm of the Democratic Party. Now I think they are, in a large part, leading the Democratic Party itself. The media seem to tell the Democratic Party what they should focus on, how they should handle things, and so the power might be shifted a bit. But having said all that, I actually was thinking about how last night, after Joe Biden's speech, the media, of course, said it was the best speech they'd ever heard in their lives, something like that. But they did it a little bit less than they did after Hillary Clinton's 2016 speech. Now, partly that is because there wasn't much to really be honestly excited about with Biden's speech, whereas with Hillary's, I think there was. And for a lot of liberal women in the media, it was very personally meaningful to them that a woman was being nominated for president from a major party. So they were just genuinely more excited. But trying to make lemonade out of the lemons of their situation with Joe Biden, it was a little more difficult for them, but they still tried to do it.
Mark, what are your thoughts on the media coverage?
Well, I think in so many ways, Aaron Sorkin and the West Wing just like totally ruined politics and political coverage in particular. You know, we have basically, you know, 20 years after the West Wing, we have basically an entire, like, press corps that was raised to believe that, you know, that what goes on in politics is just a series of heroic narratives about the undeniable progress America's going to make on every front. And so they're, like, constantly, desperately searching for these heroic stories to tell that, you know, confirm their own hopeful beliefs in, you know, a particular brand of liberalism. And so, like Molly said, it's getting to the point where the cognitive dissonance between, you know, the media ranting and raving about an entirely pedestrian Joe Biden speech. I mean, I don't think it was a bad speech. I don't think it hurt him, but there was absolutely nothing remarkable about it. As Molly said, they're like falling out of their chairs. You know, to say how, you know, amazing they were and how this was the pinnacle of Joe Biden's, you know, otherwise sort of unmemorable career in many ways. So I just don't know who the media are fooling with this stuff. You mentioned this already. The New York Times said that the DNC should win an Emmy. I believe the Washington Post critic also had a headline yesterday about how it was award-worthy television. I mean, by no means was it any of those things. Did it get the job done in certain ways? You know, perhaps. I don't think it was a disaster, but to go out of your way and basically try and wish the convention into being this, you know, fulfillment of all your personal hopes as a journalist, I think people see through that. And I think at some point, if not already, it's really hurting the Democratic Party that the media are setting these expectations that don't coincide with reality.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, and Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention when we come back. Are the Democrats going to run against Trump the man or Trump's policies?
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
They always believed that you could never build rights on the broken rights of other people, that all rights were connected. Everyone has basic human rights, and they all have to be affirmed.
That's really what he does. He only speaks the Lord's word, which is why his word never falls to the ground, because the Lord's word never falls to the ground.
Crisis does not invite us to embrace that which is novel, but to hold fast to what is sure and certain.
The point of Scripture is that the texts are about Christ. In fact, Hebrews 10 explicitly says this. Jesus explicitly says it in John 5. And we continue to manipulate the biblical text and make it about ourselves.
In about a half hour, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We'll hear those four soundbites in their entirety. Soundbite number one from Marjorie Dannenfelser on the suffragists and their thoughts on abortion. Dr. Kevin Golden on the prophet Samuel. Dr. John Pless answering the question, what's wrong with online communion? And soundbite number four, Pastor Chris Roseborough on how a narcissist reads the Bible. We'll be giving away the LPR bundle package to the listener with the best vote. That's the Ad Crucem baptismal keepsake, the I Have Issues t-shirt, then Issues Etc. pen, bumper sticker, notepad, and tote bag goes to the listener with the best vote. And you vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote right now at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the meantime, we're talking about the Democratic National Convention. Our guests are Mark and Molly Hemingway, Mark of Real Clear Investigations, and Molly Hemingway of Fox News. Molly, watching the convention, do you get the sense that the Democrats are going to run against Trump the man or Trump's policies?
Well, yes, for two reasons. One is that they don't want to really have a conversation about where their policies lead. You look at cities across the country, Democratic-run cities and Democratic states with Democratic district attorneys are in flames and have been for months, and not a single word was said about it at the convention because it's kind of the street action arm of the Democratic Party and the media. And so they don't want to talk about their own policies because I think they worry reasonably that those policies would terrify actual voters. And then the other issue is that Donald Trump's major vulnerability is his personality and his personal character, and particularly on the character issue. So that's why Joe Biden was highlighted as this very decent man. And while that's not, you know, we know that all people are sinful and that even people who are generally well-regarded have problems, or as I mentioned, he lied about something very important in his speech last night. You know, it is true that Joe Biden has a good reputation, never known for being like a policy genius or particularly a smart guy, but always known for being nice. And like if a family member dies, he'll call you and stuff like that. But each ticket has one guy like that and then one person who's not like that. So I'm not sure if it's kind of a wash in that way. And Donald Trump has character problems, but personality that his voters really like it. And so I think one thing that Democrats can get confused about is that because they are overcome with hatred and loathing of Trump, they think everybody else is. And that's just not true. Maybe everybody has a range of opinions, but not everybody has that just visceral loathing and disgust and hatred that Democrats clearly have for Trump and, to be honest, a lot of his voters.
What do you think, Mark?
So this is sort of unrelated. It's not exactly on point with the convention, but a couple of days ago, a woman who is an African-American woman who named Kim, she goes by Kim Baltimore. I can't remember her last name because it's kind of unpronounceable, but her name is Kim Baltimore, and she's running for Congress as a Republican. And she put this video online where she walks around the worst part of Baltimore and, you know, talking about how the city's been run by Democrats for decades and showing you all the poverty and the crime. And then she starts asking African-Americans who live in Baltimore, do you want to defund the police? And it's just one, you know, loud no after another. If anything, they want more police. And the Democratic Party, I think, is sort of terrified that those messages are going to start getting into the bloodstream. And this one video that this, you know, congressional candidate with very little funding just put on the internet now is over 500,000 likes on Twitter. And so, yeah, they're absolutely going out of their way right now to not talk about their policies, particularly because they can't. You know, they went out of their way to portray Joe Biden as a moderate. You know, they have all these, John Kasich and all these other people saying, I'm a Republican who's voting for Biden because he's a respectful moderate. Meanwhile, they also have Bernie Sanders speaking, talking about how Joe Biden's going to be the most progressive president ever. And it is completely incoherent, and they don't have a unified policy message whatsoever. And they know that if people start evaluating the Democratic Party, both in terms of whether they trust it to be sort of restrained in the way that it approaches policy, and in terms of, you know, basic security concerns and the things like that we have in our cities right now, that it's not a winning message for them. So, yeah, they're going out of their way to not talk about policy.
Molly, what can Republicans learn, if anything, from the DNC convention?
Well, and I really almost think it's unfair that Democrats had to go first because there was so much to learn from doing this convention this way, and there was no way to know exactly how it would go until you saw it. So they've got to learn a ton of stuff. I would say that Republicans have always felt self-conscious about the fact that they don't have celebrity endorsements. If they ever needed to learn the lesson that it's not such a problem that celebrities don't endorse them, this is the year to realize it. The celebrities fell flat in the Democratic convention. They came off condescending and arrogant and smug and just out of touch with real people. And like I said, when they had real people show up, particularly if they were nice and not blaming Donald Trump for their father's death or something that we saw on an earlier night, it worked really well. So I think Republicans had already announced a while back that they were going to have, for instance, Nick Sandman, who was the pro-life kid at Covington High School, who was absolutely terrorized by the media with false claims of racism. I think having someone like that is smart because it reminds people, A, and I think everyone's really sick of false claims of racism being put forth by the media. And it also just reminds people how powerful and unaccountable the media are. And it's just it's a normal person who was persecuted simply for going to a pro-life march. So all of these messages, having a person represent those things that you want to convey is really key. So at the Democratic convention, they had Biden kind of come out at the end each night and say thank you to one of the people who'd spoken. I think the best asset the Republicans have right now is Donald Trump. Mark mentioned he just gave like an hour-long freewheeling speech before a raucous crowd that went really well. And he had so much to talk about in terms of what he's done and what he wants to do and what he thinks about the left and the threat that they pose. And that's a lot to say, and saying it over and over and over might be good. So I don't know if that's crazy to say it, but I think maybe having more Donald Trump each night instead of just the final night would be wise for them as well.
In addition to that, Mark, do you think that they should have Kim Klechick, the woman that you mentioned a moment ago from Baltimore? Should she be one of those speakers?
I think she, based on what I've seen of her, she might be an excellent speaker. Obviously, I think the GOP, at least under the Trump era, is starting to, you know, wise up and go out of their way to solicit minority voices. Unfortunately, it's the Democrats, again, know that that's a huge vulnerability for them, that they've been taking for granted, I think, a lot of sort of ethnic and the black constituency in particular. So they do everything they can in terms of, like, you know, cultural and political pressure to keep that from happening. But over time, I think Republicans are going to keep that up, and I do think it's going to pay dividends. But, you know, by and large, the thing about this DNC was that they did everything they possibly could, basically, to play it safe and not do any damage and, you know, present themselves as moderates or this and that. But the end result of that was, while I don't think they did any particular harm, the end result is that there was absolutely nothing memorable about it. You know, a convention is usually a good chance for you to get some sort of bounce, you know, some sort of improvement in your polls or something like that. I mean, I think the Trump and the Republicans can top that simply by just doing some things to be more memorable and more interesting. And one way to do that, I think, is by having speakers that are unexpected and speakers that are a little more off the cuff and not, you know, scripted within an inch of their life. And I think that kind of authenticity is something that Trump has always benefited from. It's something that Trump himself is good at. If they can, you know, communicate that sort of, you know, freewheeling authenticity that Trump demonstrated today without any sort of big misstep in terms of, you know, someone saying something totally outrageous, and the media are going to condemn whatever Trump does, you know, regardless. But I think that they have a real opportunity here.
Molly, what are the major goals that the Republicans need to accomplish with their convention coming up?
So Mark just alluded to this, but usually conventions are this free advertising, the one chance you get every 4 years to tell the country what you're about. And as a result, you see bumps, polling bumps after the convention for the candidate and for the party in general. And I have no reason to think that wouldn't be the case here, too, even though this was not a very well-watched convention and it wasn't a particularly good convention. What's really interesting is how, of the two parties, here we are the day after the convention, the Democratic convention, it's the Republican Party that is feeling really good right now. I think they are really pleased that the Democrats didn't do things better during their convention. And a big example being in 1992, Bill Clinton really showed what an effective politician he was by condemning the fringe of his party. And it was called the Sister Souljah movement, where he condemned this rap artist in particular. And it really showed moderate voters that he meant what he said when he was being moderate. Democrats were unwilling and unable to condemn their fringe, in part because it's not so fringe anymore. It's becoming a really big part of the party. And so I think mostly the Republicans can just kind of, I mean, they don't have to do that much to have a big success next week. Although I do think that they need to really focus on policy. Sometimes people just vote against people they dislike, and that's what Democrats are hoping for, that enough people dislike Trump that they will win. But people also like to be given something to vote for. And people thought that Donald Trump won because people didn't like Hillary Clinton. That is part of it. But they also really liked his policies. They liked what he had to say about really taking immigration seriously. They liked what he had to say about not fighting wars the same way we had been fighting them poorly for recent decades. They liked what he said about the economy and trade and taking it to China. And he has had all these successes with that. He should remember what brought him that success and continue talking about those policies that people like.
Mark, what do you think the major goals for the Republicans should be going into the convention?
I do think that they should, one, I mean, I think that they should actually try and cast a light, as we've already discussed, on the sort of cultural damage being done by progressivism and all of the woke stuff that's happening. And as Molly already said, you know, Nick Sandman and other people are speaking that I think are going to highlight that. Trump himself has, you know, made that an issue. Because I do think that is something that people are finding, you know, concerning right now, especially since it's led to all this rioting and stuff like that. I mean, those things are linked. And the second thing is, I mean, I think that they should point out that the Biden presidency is not going to be nearly as moderate as they've been saying this. Basically, if you look at the party platform and the Biden campaign docs and things like that, they represent in a lot of ways a total capitulation to the Bernie Sanders crowd that has been causing, you know, a big, you know, ruckus in the party for the last they tried to drive home at the convention is just a really dubious proposition, and they need to make voters aware that that is the case, that the modern Democratic Party, that Barack Obama got elected as a pragmatist and went to the left, and there's substantially, and now Biden is, you know, running as this, you know, pragmatist, you know, veteran moderate, and there's no reason to think that even though on Biden's watch the country went much further to the left, that Biden is going to be holding the line in any way, shape, or form, and the Democratic Party is much more overt about their desire to go to the left than they ever were in the Obama tenure. So I think that people really need to the Republican voters really need to hear that message to get on board.
We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, and Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor. We'll discuss a little bit more about what lies ahead right after this. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.
The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. Century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a series of pamphlets called a Simple Explanation Series. These brief booklets provide solid scriptural guidance on several Christian topics, including a simple explanation of church and state. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews, a Simple Explanation Series. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, and Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and co-author of the book Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Molly, what speakers are you looking forward to hearing at next week's RNC convention?
Well, it's an obvious answer, but Donald Trump. I just listened to his hour-long speech today. It was almost like a stand-up act. There's something so different about his rhetoric than almost every other politician that whether you love him or hate him, he's really fun to watch. I already mentioned Nick Sandman, who I am looking forward to, although, you know, for all I know, he's just going to have a 30-second thing. I just feel very bad for that kid and what the media put him through. But I think other than that, it would be Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota. She has shown remarkable courage in the face of, again, media pressure on how she should be running her state. And she keeps on doing things in a way that is generating excitement. And a lot of people are like moving to South Dakota because they're excited by her, which is kind of crazy. But she's a very interesting woman who served in Congress before she became governor. So I'm just kind of curious to see how she performs at the convention.
Mark, which ones are you looking forward to?
Well, I would just basically second everything that Molly said. I mean, I think if Trump goes out there and manages to strike the right tone, much like he did in his speech today, it could be potentially very sort of devastating because the media is looking for something that they can really glom onto. I mean, they're going to say the RNC was a failure no matter what, but they really want some sort of like, you know, standout moment of Trump saying something, you know, supposedly crazy or whatever, you know, that they can pounce on. And if, you know, Trump maintains an even keel and just is himself, and is, you know, shows that he's a million times more engaging than, say, Biden's incredibly scripted performances, I think it will definitely get people talking about the differences between the two. I mean, you know, clearly they're hiding Biden. I don't know, for whatever reason. I mean, maybe it's because of his cognitive decline. Maybe it's because they think that he can only do harm at a time when Trump is vulnerable in the polls. But I think that if Trump goes out there and turns in a great performance, and Trump certainly had a track record of, you know, rising to incredible challenges when he ran in 2016, he has single-handedly has the power to like completely change the tenor of the election in a moment. And I don't think that you could say that necessarily about Biden.
With that in mind, and finally for both of you, one of the subjects in the images that was assiduously avoided in the DNC convention was violence in the streets. Do the Republicans need to avoid that, or do they need to highlight it? Molly?
Well, the reason why Democrats avoided it is because they know how devastating it is to their message. The people who are rioting in the streets, whether they're Antifa or part of other leftist organizations, this was supposed to be a big part of Democratic messaging. They wanted to have what they could call peaceful protests throughout the summer, showing youth being upset about Republicans, that would carry them to victory in November. And almost immediately, those quote-unquote peaceful riots, no matter what the media claimed, turned violent with arson, murders, assault, destruction of businesses, all in these like cities across the country. And those things really matter. It can cause people to flee cities. And when you have a small decrease in the tax base of a city and a huge increase in violence, it can really spiral out of control very quickly. So Republicans need to, particularly since the media are hiding what's happening in Portland and Seattle with very few exceptions, they need to highlight that and really send the message that if you think you want to take a chance on Democratic governance, like these are the people that will be coming to power. So make sure you're comfortable with that.
Mark, what are your thoughts on those violent images?
So in the last week or two, I've seen a handful of polls that show that some interesting developments in Minnesota, which is, you know, one of the few areas of the country where Democrats in the last decade or so have really made big inroads into capturing sort of a portion of the white middle class voting base that was traditionally Republican. And the trends are reversing ominously for Democrats in Minnesota a little bit because of the violence in particular. And as far as other places, like obviously, you know, the violence is really bad in places like Portland, but Trump lost Oregon by 11 points in 2016. He's not getting that state back. But there are a lot of places where there's violence in cities where the states are purple or otherwise. And if this in any way turns off urban voters to the Democratic Party or in any way makes them less enthusiastic, that's a huge, huge problem for Democrats because they count on, you know, huge turnouts in urban areas to counteract sort of the rural, more Republican vote. So there's been a lot of violence in places like Wisconsin and stuff where if people are on the fence in that state and it just tampers enthusiasm even slightly in a swing state like that, then it could pay huge dividends to the Republican Party. So, yeah, obviously I think that they need to point this out. But, you know, never mind the fact that in places like Portland, they've had violence for, like, literally months on end every night. And this is a logical outcome of progressive politics because the mayor refuses to condemn it. The local DA is basically refusing to press charges against the vast, vast majority of the hundreds of rioters that they've been arresting. So, yeah, I mean, these things are not unconnected to Democratic policy goals, and they need to make that very, very clear that this is, we know what the logical outcome of, you know, Democratic policy goals are, and it's Portland. If you want that, you know, then you can vote for Democrats, but I make a good bet that most people don't.
Molly, where do you expect the campaigns to go post-conventions?
Well, it's a little difficult to say because 2020 is such a weird year, particularly with coronavirus. I think normally what you'd see is just intense months of campaigning with increased focus on battleground states. Joe Biden seems to have as part of his message this idea that he would institute a mask mandate in January, that he thinks that the coronavirus means that we should ban children from schools and generally keep everything shut down until and unless a vaccine is found. This really means that he cannot campaign in person very effectively without compromising that message. And he's definitely running on this idea that China is not to blame for the coronavirus. It's Donald Trump who somehow is responsible for the global pandemic. And so he is constrained. He thinks, or his campaign thinks, I believe, that this is the way to play into his problems with energy and acuity. But I'm just not entirely sure where they're going to go and whether the media can keep that going as well as they did in June and July. And the Trump campaign, I think, understands that they do not have this won. Certainly the polls show him down quite a bit. And I'm not sure if they believe those polls, but they know that he's not ahead, particularly notably. And so they will be fighting hard. They've had Mike Pence out on the road, particularly in battleground states, and they will continue to do that and give people opportunities for rally-like events. You know, you can see that in the way that they are just even encouraging people to come and cheer on roadways as the president or vice president or other people make speeches. But I think it'll be close, and I think it'll be hard fought.
Mark, where do you think the campaigns will go next?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I mean, I would co-sign on everything that Molly said. You know, a lot of it is, you know, at this point in time, is just sort of fundamentals. You got to, you know, go out and somehow, you know, in this weird environment, get your messages to sort of the key areas. And I frankly don't understand what the Democrats are doing other than just sort of taking comfort in the fact that Joe is ahead in the polls and playing it entirely safe. And I just don't think that you can do that, particularly against a candidate like Trump, who, you know, as I already said, is like single-handedly capable of like changing the entire election in an instant because he's, you know, such a force. So I don't know exactly what you're going to do in terms of this pandemic. But yeah, Pence has been out there, and I think that Republicans just need to start thinking about a way to sort of put the focus back on Biden and make him answer questions as much as possible.
You can read Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Mark Hemingway's senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. Mark, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And Molly Hemingway is Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and co-author of the book Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, and The Future of the Supreme Court. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to play our four soundbites for you. Then we'll start taking your votes live this Friday afternoon, August the 21st.
With the growth of the evangelical mega churches, especially of the seeker-driven and purpose-driven type, we've had an entire generation of kids who have never experienced any kind of meaningful form of catechesis or even basic biblical instruction.
Pastor Chris Roseborough speaking at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
As a result of this, They have never been exposed to what the Bible teaches regarding the one true God who exists in three eternal persons. The reason why the doctrine of the Trinity exists is because this is exactly what God has revealed about himself.
You can watch and listen to Chris Roseborough's presentation, Making the Case for the Trinity, and all of the teachings from this year's conference for a tax-deductible donation of $250. It's available via on-demand video streaming or podcast. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Ad Crucem is proud to support Christian education for students of all ages. We offer posters of the Lord's Prayer, Martin Luther's Morning and Evening Prayers, the Three Creeds, the Small Catechism, and more. Additionally, we offer baptism, confirmation, and marriage certificates. Stock up now for the new school year and ensure your learning environment is distinctively Lutheran with these quality products. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.